From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our second hour this morning, William Petruccelli, co-owner of Bay Area bookstore chain Book Passage, has just published his first novel. Filled with strong female characters, The Circle of 13 is a futuristic thriller about an international terrorist group that targets women. He'll join us for the first half hour, followed by a half hour with Randi Zuckerberg. Her brother Mark connected over a billion people as founder and CEO of Facebook, and it might come as a surprise that Randi, a former Facebook executive herself, has written a book about the hazards of social media. In Dot Complicated, she recommends digital downtime in order to improve real-life relationships, and she'll join us to discuss her new book and the pros and cons of being plugged in. Next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. William Petruccelli and his wife Elaine are booksellers who run Book Passage, the independent bookstore located both in Corte Madera in Marin County and the Ferry Building in San Francisco. A former legal and poverty attorney in Oakland and former California Deputy Attorney General is the author of a couple of books, Low Profile, How to Avoid the Private Invaders, and Sexual Harassment on the Job, What It Is and How to Stop It. And recently, he published his first novel, The Secret of 13, and joins us in studio this Forum segment. Well, I got to tell you, when you first told me you were embarking on writing a novel, I've told you, I even tried to encourage you. I said, you know, that's terrific at your age, and here you've actually brought it into fruition. But that was a challenge, wasn't it?
Well, it is.
Major
right?
Challenge.
Yeah. Writing a novel is different than writing nonfiction, that's for sure. But on the other hand, it's a much more engaging process. It touches a part of it a little deeper, and it draws on all your life experience. So the Circle of 13 has been a labor of love for me.
Well, this kind of grabbed me when I first read it. I mean, I don't want to give away too much here, but it opens with a pretty powerful scene, and we get essentially a lot of psychological cause and effect from that first scene. I don't want to give too much away here, but it has a lot to do with abuse, and it has a lot to do with what some of the consequences are from abuse.
Well, that's one of the themes of the novel I wanted to explore, and that is the long-term effects of violence, particularly in this case family violence, how it can impact people from generation to generation. I'm glad you like that scene because it definitely does come out and hit you fast.
You've got a lot of issues in this book, Bill. Co-housing and child care and child prostitution and the food problems that are up ahead because it's a futuristic book, and the environmental catastrophes that are up ahead. In fact, I was thinking a lot of people, including your wife, think you're very prescient and maybe even oracular. And I'm thinking, is he predicting some things here,
like a reconstitution of
the United Nations?
No,
and things
no. Well, you thank you for mentioning it. It hits on a lot of things. But first and foremost, I wanted to write a book that was entertaining, that someone would pick it up and read and finish in a couple of days and put it down and say, that was good. And then go back and maybe think about some of the issues. And that's kind of the reaction I've gotten from people, that they've go through it very fast and they think, well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that issue. So I deliberately set it up as a thriller so that it would have the discipline and the fast-moving plot that would keep you involved. I didn't want to make it a long saga covering a whole lot of issues. So I had to tie all those issues in as I went along.
Is that where it goes then in the bookshelves as a bookseller? You have to find the book niche.
Well, that's a problem.
It's a thriller or it's a feminist polemic or it's a futuristic dystopian. It's a lot of different
things. It's a lot of different things. I actually had a couple of booksellers ask me, Bill, where should I shelf this? Cross-genre drives publishers nuts. But that's the kind of book I wanted to write.
And you also wrote a book that does a lot of time shifting and has a lot of different points of view. I mean, for a first novel, you took on a lot of what virtuosos do in novels.
Well, I figured, I might as well just start big and start with take on a big challenge. But the shifting of the points of view was in many ways difficult, but in many ways made it a little easier because I could come at the same problem from different characters and make it easier to explain it to the reader.
So a very serious book about misogyny. I mean, you've always been kind of a card-carrying feminist and very open about your feelings and your responses to the feminist movement, and this book does have a polemic in it.
Well, I don't know if it's a polemic so much as what I tried to do is show women in a positive role. I tried to project out some of the ways in which the women's equality might play out in the future. And I think what some readers are somewhat a little bit startled by is the fact that the main characters are mostly women, and the positive characters at least, and they're constantly dealing with each other. There's no male authority figure they have to they go back to all the time to ratify what they're doing. And I think that's a little bit different in fiction, and probably different. I don't think there are many men writing it that way.
So, getting into the head of someone who is, like I say, I don't want to give too much away here, but who is deeply psychologically disturbed and violent and all that, and you have this binary in this character. We'll call him Abraham. Why not call him Abraham? but, you know, he's got his brain in charge and he's got his brain on fire, and you see that kind of dichotomy going on, and I thought, boy, was there some neurological research here? Is this just
no? I just tried to imagine what it would be like to be somewhat schizophrenic, to have two different voices talking to you at the same time, and the brain in charge is arrogant and very intelligent. The brain on fire just gives in to his worst instincts, and the two are constantly battling.
And you are celebrating women in this novel, really, aren't you?
I am. The title actually refers, the Circle of 13 actually refers to a group of women who, during the course of the backstory of the book, really, it feeds into the main plot line. But during the course of the story, they work together to try to achieve social justice in the world. Imagine them as sort of like the Occupy movement expanded greatly throughout society.
Well, that's how I did imagine them, actually, in reading your book. We've also got the Patria group. You want to talk about that?
Well, the Patria group is a group of – it's basically a male backlash against the empowerment of women. And the character you alluded to earlier is a master at feeding on men's fears that somehow or another, by giving equality to women in society, they're going to lose something important. And he appeals to their worst instincts.
They already have lost something important. In fact, in this futuristic world that you imagine for us, we've got a report that was released in 2054 about all these rootless men.
Well, I'm not sure that a report issued right now would be all that different
in that respect.
Yeah. There are a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of men who look upon any advancement of women as a sort of a personal insult to them. And it's sad.
You talk about putting the tiles in, you know, once you got this thriller going and this mystery going and the suspense in it and all that. Is it sort of against those instincts? Is it kind of a binary, too, in terms of wanting things to be didactic or wanting to have the novel serve those other purposes?
Well, I had to constantly, and this is why it took a couple of years to write this, I had to constantly tell myself, Bill, I want the serious issues in the story to be seen through the eyes of the characters. It's characters and the plot that's the most important. And Julia Morrow, my main lead character in the book, is she most of what we see in the book is seen through her eyes. And she can sift out and focus in on the important issues without making it a long slog about, you know, various political things. I wanted to get away from the day-to-day political issues, the political discussion of these issues, and look at it from a different perspective.
Julia's actually quite a rounded character and an admirable character, and there's also, a mystery going on about her that also carries you through the novel.
Yeah, well, I really kind of ended up liking the character by the time it was over. You can't write a character like that, especially in the first-person narrative, and not at the end of the book think highly of her. She's in her late 30s. She's a security director for the United Nations, and she's she's troubled by all kinds of things. I mean, she's emotionally troubled, but she's absolutely fearless, physically fearless is the way I would describe her.
Like I said, quite admirable. We're talking to Bill Petrocelli-Cohen, our book Passage, author of a new novel, The Circle of 13. He's also former Deputy Attorney General of California. And there's a lot of local color in this book. I mean, even the Corte Madera Creek, but you got San Francisco, San Rafael, Marin, it's all there.
Well, I try to put in some local scenes and kind of imagine what they would be look like a couple of years from now. I have a lot of New York in the book as well. But I think it's important to ground it in a particular locale. That's the locale I know best.
Well, you're in two locales now, Book Passage in Corte Madera and in San Francisco, as I said. That was sort of a plug and a segue at the same time because I wanted to talk with you a bit about the independent books business and how things are faring. especially are people still buying novels?
They are. You know, it's the book business is constantly changing. We've been in it for 30, 35 years, and it's been in constant chaos the entire time. But I think what's happening right now is that a lot of people are rediscovering the importance of a bookstore just as an environment to go into, to talk to people, to see events, to have classes, to do all the kinds of personal interactions you would do around a book. That's not to say all books are going to be sold through bookstores. There's still a lot of online sales. There's still a lot of books sold at warehouse clubs and things like that. But for people who want the experience of talking about a book and interacting with a book, independent bookstores have proved to be a very resilient group of businesses. I mean, some of my colleagues around the country, other booksellers, are some of the most imaginative entrepreneurial people you'd find. They come up with all kinds of ideas that in any other kind of business would be on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, but because it's bookselling, it's sort of carried along by folk tales.
What's the biggest obstacle now for facing independent booksellers? I mean, it used to be the chains, and to some extent that hasn't really entirely gone away, but they weren't the ongoing formidable adversary that you all thought they would be. In fact, some of them have fallen to community independent bookstores. But now you've got an industry that's some people see in decline. You've got the Kindles going out everywhere. You've got Google selling books for almost nothing.
I would say that the biggest challenge is not – I mean, I'm tempted to say it's e-books, but that's not entirely correct. It's not e-books so much as it is the publisher's reaction to e-books. The e-books and print books are pretty well stabilized in terms of the amount that each one sells in the market. And but I constantly worry that publishers and particularly the big publishers will kind of lose their nerve and not – let us as bookstores try and do the things we do best and sell print books.
Again, we're talking to Bill Petruccelli, and let me invite those of you listening to become part of this program. It's only a half hour. Randy Zuckerberg will be joining us after the break. So if you have a question or a comment for Bill Petruccelli, I'm sure he'd love to hear from some who have read his book or have some thoughts about writing this kind of novel, which is a very ambitious novel, futuristic, dystopian thriller, I said, has all those ingredients in it. You are welcome to join the conversation. And also, if you have some thoughts about, well, the independent bookselling business and the kind of facing what kinds of challenges at this point in time. You may even want to be futuristic like William Petruccelli and talk about what you think the future is for independent booksellers, especially those as tied to the community as Book Passages. But we welcome your involvement in the program. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us with any questions or comments you might have. Again, at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And again, the new novel, with mainly strong female characters, or filled with them, is called The Circle of 13. It's a futuristic thriller about an international terrorist group that targets women. And it's because women have come into power, really. And to a great extent, I think... this is perhaps where you are being prescient about women. Many people's minds are looking likely that Hillary Clinton will be running as the next candidate.
It's possible. In the novel, I allude to the fact there's a woman president, but I don't. But she's just off stage.
Yeah, I caught that. You didn't want to necessarily get yourself in into that hot water of mentioning Hillary specifically. But let's talk a little bit about what you envision in the novel. I mean, in terms of women coming into their own.
Well, the novel doesn't is not an anti-male thing by any means. It's simply an attempt to visualize the world where women have equal political and social power, and the main characters I deal with in the book are holding jobs that normally men would hold, and they're interacting with each other.
Glass ceilings have been broken, really.
Well, yeah, that's sort of the hope.
That's also sort of your prediction in a way, though.
Well, I actually do think that we're probably, when you look at the the cycle of the women's movement. We're about 100 years into what I would think is about a 200-year cycle that would bring women into full equality in society. And as far as I'm concerned, it can't happen soon enough. I'm tired of guys like me being the only voice in running things. I think women have a lot to say. We'd probably be a lot better off.
And you and Elaine have one of those kind of partnerships?
Yeah.
Or who rules the roost?
I have learned a lot from Elaine over the years. She's not a outspoken feminist. She's just a quiet one. She just would point out very gently where things were wrong. And it took me a while after many years to realize that, yeah, as growing up like I did as a guy in the 50s and the 60s, nobody ever pointed that out to me. And so it took Elaine to do it in a nice way.
Let's bring in some callers. Our guest again, Bill Petrocelli. Our first caller is Nima. Good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay.
Thanks for the program. I wanted to point out something about in the media space that it seems like it doesn't matter how much that good things are written and profound things are published, but the self-publishing business, it seems like the more money you have, even the most mediocre stories come up, and there's no voice for the profound ones. And the profound ones are just going to the blogs, and they become disappointed. What is the future going to be like, not for censorship, but promoting really profound stories, especially from foreign lands, to land in America?
You're asking really about the quality, the future of the quality and content. Right. Bill, some thoughts?
Well, I think your caller hit on a serious problem, and that is promoting a book and distributing a book is the hardest problem. Getting the attention of all of the media in the country to a good work of fiction or any other good work for that matter. I would say a couple of things. First of all, some publishers now who are importing foreign novels of high quality, and they're starting to make an impact in stores. But there's also, I think, a need to look seriously at self-publishing and promoting through a sort of a ground-up kind of approach. I don't think traditional publishing will ever go by the wayside, but you know, at Book Passage, we're working on a program now of trying to get people who want to publish their own book, figure out a way to do it and get it promoted and get it into the mainstream in a way that a few years ago you couldn't do.
Well, you can do it with Google now or Amazon, and you can, of course, use social networks.
Yeah, you can promote it that way, but I'm talking about actually publishing the book and making it available through to stores around the country. And there are ways of doing it that weren't available a year ago.
Before ebooks, we had the cartel takeovers that really did hurt. I think where individual authors, particularly what I would call more serious or literary authors, were concerned, they had to show a profit and they had to tie it in maybe to sales to TV or film and so forth. And now that's simply a given, really.
Well, one of the problems is all of the big publishers in the country, the major publishers, six or seven major ones, are all owned by international conglomerates. They're all very small part of very large business. And as a bookseller and as an author, I mean, we deal fine with the people at the bookseller, at the book selling level. They're wonderful people. They love books. But as soon as the bean counters from somewhere come in and start running things, it can change everything.
Let's go to another caller. Sarah, join us. You're on. Hi.
Wonderful. I am the PTA president of Marin Elementary School that is currently doing a Book Passage book fair. And I just have to say there's something amazing about seeing the young children come in and that physical book in their hand. And Book Passage has been wonderful enough to bring in an author to do a reading. And for me, keeping the independent bookstores alive, this is key, and I love it, that there's this on-campus young reader presence. And I just wondered if you had any comments or just wanted to take my appreciation for hosting our book fair this year.
I love your appreciation for it. I'm glad that your book fair is a success. We love working with book fairs, and we love working with children. We've developed a couple of reading groups at the store with children who come in and they read their own books. They review them and promote them themselves. What I found is that, despite the common wisdom to the contrary, is that children love print books. And yeah. they probably like them more than everyone gives. Everyone thinks the kids are all going to read e-books, but I'm not sure that's true. I think it's older people that are reading e-books, and children still love print books, and their parents love to have them read print books.
And Sarah, thank you for that call.
Yeah.
Very good to hear from you this morning.
Thank you.
Here's a listener who writes on our website, which women novelists have inspired you, and how hard was it to write from the point of view of a gender different than your own?
Well, you know, it wasn't that hard to write in a different gender. It was a challenge, and it was a challenge I wanted to do, and it was actually kind of an enlightening one because it forced you to sit back and think, you know, what kind of a reaction would a woman have rather than me, and it in a way it almost changes your own behavior. In terms of women novels who inspire me, one book that I love. Is Margaret Atwood's book, The Handmaid's Tale.
Which is also a futuristic dystopian novel.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And a feminist novel.
Right.
I kept thinking about Handmaid's Tale when reading your book.
Another novelist I really love is Catherine Neville, who's written books on somewhat similar to this that happen on two time sequences simultaneously.
You've even got stuff in here about genetic engineering and food shortages. I mean, you're really going – it's a giant breadbasket of issues, I would say.
Well, the food shortage one, that evolved as I was writing the book. If you look into the future, you think, how is the environmental crisis going to play out? And it'll play out in all kinds of ways, you know, with islands being submerged and all kinds of climate disruptions. But if it gets really bad, we'll get down to food, with food shortages, and that's where it'll hit everybody.
And you've got, the food monopolies to take on here, too, that exist in the future. Let me get another caller on. Ricardo, that's you. Hi.
Hello. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for speaking on books so eloquently. I'm going to ask two questions. One is to do with the bookstore dilemma of dropping out of the 3D bookstore level brick and mortar properties that I've seen in San Francisco for many different decades now, 2 to 3 decades of bookstores disappearing. And what is the advertisement level you have to do to try and contain this from seeing what happens on the internet? And the second question is to do with your novel. And did you mention anything about stop watching us into a dystopian future that seems to be taking great hold now?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you mean by the question about the book, but let me say about the dystopian future. I would say that my novel is pessimistic in the short run and optimistic in the long run. It covers a couple of decades.
But you get in with Big Brother and privacy? No,
not really. That's for another story. But it's
for the
probably
sequel.
Working in the background. But
But he wanted to know about independent bookstores, also bricks and mortar. I mean,
I think that
optimistic there too.
Well, I am. Somewhat. I mean, I think the bookstores that have survived have become much more diversified and intelligent in the way they approach their business. A lot of people are buying into bookstores from other fields, people that with money and experience in other fields, people who should know better. If there was something wrong with bookstores, they wouldn't be doing it. So I think people see a future for it. And I think the key is to make sure the store really reflects the community and provides community service.
And again, William Petruccelli is co-owner of Book Passage, author of the new novel, The Circle of 13, also former Deputy Attorney General of California. Good luck. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You're launched as a novelist. And when we return, we're going to meet Randy Zuckerberg. Stay where you are. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.